Did you know that the 4th of July is on a Thursday this year? That's going to be a full weekend of fun out on the deck, 4 days. But if your deck isn't what it used to be and you aren't using it for great family gatherings, you need to call my friends at All Weather Decks. All Weather Decks is a 24-time winner of the Angie Super Service Award. And they probably help one of your neighbors. Click on the map link at allweatherdecks.net. Call All Weather Decks today at 913-206-1974 or go to allweatherdecks.net and mention you heard it on 810. Call now and relax.
We continue right here on Sports Radio 810 WHB on this Friday, Black Friday edition, post-Thanksgiving. Matt Derrick hanging out with us here as we talk some Chiefs-Rams. We talk some NFL football, some Thanksgiving as well. How was your Thanksgiving? Was it nice?
It was busy.
Was it?
We were hosting.
Oh, so, we hosted as well.
So, yeah. There was a lot of dishes to be made yesterday.
Oh my! There was a lot of dishes to be made and a lot of dishes to be done.
Yesterday.
So I am on cleanup duty when we're hosting, and I think I started around 7 and got done around 10:30 with the cleanup with dishes and sweeping and then the counter and then all that stuff. Yeah, it was. But it was a blast. It was a lot of fun having the family over and everything, and watching some football. And my brother and nephew live over on the Missouri side, so they over when we're hosting on the DraftKings, and we're, you know, having some fun with some parlays and some live betting and some anytime touchdowns and things like that, watching the game. So we had a good time. We enjoyed it.
See, and I was cooking all day.
Well, there you go.
Did not watch a second of any sports.
No way.
No.
You didn't just have it on somewhere, like on your phone or something?
I had my phone on, but I didn't have the games on.
Wow.
I was binging something on my phone. So.
Well, you know what? Good for you. You were binging cooking is what you
exactly.
were doing.
Exactly.
Was it the cooking channel on your phone? Is that what you were binging?
You know, it should have been. It should have been.
So what's the specialty that Matt makes? What are you making?
This year we did a smoked turkey. I did not smoke it.
Okay.
Our butchers, the uppercut, up near Liberty, smoked that thing, did a great job. But then the question is just how long do you reheat it?
Oh, yeah.
See, so my research, this was the first time we'd done this, so my research had said like 3 to 4 hours. It was closer to 5.
Okay.
So, yeah. But the sweet potatoes were a big hit, the roasted sweet potatoes.
Nice. Good.
With a nice little glaze and pecans.
Nice.
So
look at
went,
you.
That went pretty well.
There we go. Yeah.
Stuffing, I think, was okay. It seemed to be serviceable. I think everybody, you know, passed on the green beans.
Really?
Green beans were not my best dish.
Okay. But not the green bean. You didn't go green bean casserole?
No, I went with some roasted green beans using the air fryer, so I could, you know, I was had a diversity because I knew everyone was going to be busy with a lot of things. So it's like, okay, I got an Instapot, I got the air fryer. How can I mix this up? Mashed potatoes were done in the Instapot. That turned out fantastic.
Nice, good for you.
Yeah,
well done. So. My wife put sausage in the stuffing for the first time this year.
Yeah, I wouldn't
nice.
Be opposed to that.
Yeah, I liked it. It was
wouldn't be opposed to that.
It was good. The sides are the best. I mean, I know that people get the turkey. Here's the thing. Turkey is so overrated that we only make it like once a year on Thanksgiving.
And then
it's so overrated that the star of the food is the sides in Thanksgiving. When you go and have a steak, the star is not the loaded baked potato. The steak is the star.
See, I don't think that turkey's overrated. The problem
is it just
is
properly
that
rated? It's not very good?
I think it's
or dry?
I think properly rated. I mean, you know, it's not Andy Reid, but it's not Nathaniel Hackett.
Okay.
It's, you know, I mean, somewhere it's a solid.
What coach is turkey? It's a solid coach.
I think it's a solid Pete Carroll.
Well, Pete Carroll's won a Super Bowl. He's been to a couple.
Well, I think turkey's capable of winning a Super Bowl.
Can't be Pete Carroll.
Sean McDermott? Could you live with that?
It's an interesting one. You know, is around. You know of him. You kind of look forward to them from time to time, but then when you're actually there on the day and it counts, it's kind of underwhelming.
See, and I don't, I, I, I can't buy that, but I can buy the fact that turkey is hard to prepare, so you're not going to do it all the time.
Yeah.
You know, so
mm-hmm.
it's seasonal, you know, too.
Right.
So, hey, do I want turkey in May? No. But turkey and chicken are so close.
Yeah.
To a degree, and yet we eat chicken all the time. I mean, it makes you wonder, are we just, you know, 1 degree away from turkey filet being, you know, the hot fast food restaurant?
I mean, maybe.
Would you like some turkey strips?
Anybody? Is it the thickness of the turkey? Because you eat turkey sandwiches all the time.
Exactly.
See,
maybe it's just the consistency.
I think it's the turkey sandwiches, I think, add some moisture. So you can put some, you know, whether it's some mayonnaise or whatever, you know, condiment you want on the turkey sandwich. To me, like the dark meat, good. I'm good with the dark meat when it comes to the turkey. It's just, it's so, like you said, hard to prepare. How do you get the turkey to be juicy, to actually taste good, flavorful, to where you're not just drenching it in gravy and mashed potatoes and sort of putting the whole thing together?
And you and I are apparently in the minority, because I was probably into my 30s before I was willing to eat white turkey meat. I mean, I was all dark as a youth.
If I don't have the mashed potatoes or the gravy or other things around, I'm not going to eat the dark meat. Like I'd be like the Vikings yesterday when who was it? Adam Thielen that had to spit out the food. Because he was like, sorry, the turkey's so dry, I can't really talk. And he spit it out. And then Justin Jefferson didn't want to take a bite. And Kirk Cousins was like, I'm eating it. You know, it's fine. they were not excited. Like that to me is like, oh, let me get a piece of that. No. It's now I remember why I just go for the ham on Thanksgiving. Got to have the ham and the turkey. Got to have both of them and just go for the ham on Thanksgiving. It's what I like about Christmas is that you're not specific to, you have turkey. You can have roast beef at Christmas. You could have steak at Christmas. You could have a ham at Christmas. You could have turkey at Christmas. You can do a
Chinese.
Lot of different things.
There you go.
You can have Chinese at Christmas. You can do a lot of different things. It's not the, well, if you don't have a turkey now, it's just what's the point? Like, you have to have turkey. It's tradition. Like, you don't have to have a turkey at Christmas. You can have a lot of
prime rib. We're ham people.
You can have prime rib. You can have ham.
You can do ham at Christmas.
You know? The best part about Thanksgiving for us is that on Saturdays we do a thing called Ribsgiving, where everybody gets together and it's a huge gathering and everybody brings a slab of ribs.
Man, I really want ribs.
People smoke their own ribs. People go to all. So it's awesome because, you know, sometimes you want to compare like, oh, I like this place ribs better. But when's the last time you ate there versus over there? And you're like, well, I remember what that tasted like. Now you can just get a plate full. And just go down the line. Here's, get a bite of this, get a bite of that, get a bite of that. And just compare all the ribs from all over the city. Other people, you know, smoking their own ribs, which you'd better be good at if you're going to, you know, come to Ribsgiving when people are going to barbecue restaurants around the city.
You're proud of yourself. Yeah, you're proud of yourself if you're doing that.
So Ribsgiving is a blast. Love it. That's, you got your Thanksgiving, you got your Friendsgiving. We got Ribsgiving. That's what we do.
That's pretty good.
I tried to carry it over into Louisville when I was there, but
there's no ribs in Louisville.
Didn't really take. You know, it's like there's two restaurants to choose from, and one of them just pours barbecue sauce over the ribs. When I first moved there, and there's a couple of good places in Louisville that's good barbecue. There's one that's actually a Kansas City style barbecue that he took to Louisville, which is good. That was the place that we ate at when we wanted barbecue. And then my buddy, who opened up his own barbecue restaurant, which is maybe the best brisket I've ever had, was just at his house one day. I'm like, holy bleep! He ended up opening up a restaurant because he was that good. So when I first got there, I'm like, all right, I need some barbecue. It's been a few weeks. Where do I go? And they're like, oh, this place, you know, go here. I'm not even going to say the place. I went there, ordered ribs, and it came, and it wasn't plated. It was in like one of those to-go order, you know, burger and fries place, like one of those plastic sort of like bowl looking things, and the ribs were there and it was just laying in the sauce, and I was like, I don't even want to eat this, because if you're telling me the only thing I should be tasting is your sauce, you don't trust your ribs and your ability to smoke the ribs if all you're doing is just soaking it in your barbecue sauce. Can't do it. So that was a tough first impression. I'm like, yeah, no. So it didn't really hold. But tomorrow, can't wait.
So we're all going over to Jason's for Ribsgiving.
It's actually my buddy's up north. You want to come? You're invited.
There you go.
You're invited.
I'd have to find some place to get some ribs.
Wherever. Where's your favorite place to get some ribs? Wherever.
I got a few places.
It's at my nephew's house over right off of Berry Road.
Now we're talking.
See, up north.
Now we're talking. Yeah. Everybody, if you got some ribs, head to Jason's. Brothers?
Nephew. Yep.
There you go.
Yeah, absolutely. You're invited. All right. So if you want to come tomorrow, just text me and I'll give you all the details and everything and let you know. And bring ribs wherever you want, from wherever you want.
That sounds pretty awesome.
Yeah. So you can get there, hang out and watch some football, shoot the breeze, and people bring sides and everything. So there's beans and everything. It's awesome.
People should steal this idea. This is fantastic.
Absolutely. Spread the love. Yeah. 100%. People should steal the idea. Carter Jensen will be there. Royals catcher in the minor leagues, 18-year-old that had one of the best minor league seasons we've seen for a long time. So he'll be there. If any Royals fans want to find out where my nephew lives and just stalk the place, I don't know. Sorry, I don't know if I was supposed to give that away or not. I'm not really sure. Bobby Witt will be there. No, I'm just joking. Mahomes will be there. It's gonna be a blast. It's gonna be great. I enjoyed Thanksgiving. The games were fun. You didn't end up watching any of the games.
Which is
really interesting. Because there was a time when it's like, are the Lions going to pull this off? Are the Lions going to be able to beat the Bills? And I took the Lions in the points. I took the Giants in the points as well, because I thought there were some the Cowboys, I thought, was a perfect letdown spot. You know, you're at home for Thanksgiving. The Giants just got beat by the Lions, and you played almost a perfect game against the Vikings. It was a 10-point spread. I ended up teasing it up to 16, so I was good either way once they missed the field goal at the end, the Cowboys did. But then the Giants end up covering anyway with that late touchdown. So I like the Giants to keep that closer. I had the Vikings money line, and I had the Lions plus the points. I didn't know what it would like. I didn't think the Lions would have a chance there in the fourth quarter to like win it. I thought it might be a backdoor cover. But if it was close, I was looking at it and thinking, like, if it's close, it's because the Bills head to Detroit with all the craziness in the weather. They play the Browns, then they fly back home for like 36 hours, then they fly back to Detroit on a short week. And you're playing a Detroit team that is on top of the world. Just went to New York and won, and now you're Thanksgiving at home, and you're playing a team where you got an opportunity to litmus test, to really see where you're at. And the Bills are, you know, maybe beaten up a little bit, maybe tired. I thought it was a perfect spot for an upset for the Lions, and I thought they were going to get it done. The Josh Allen red zone interception in the third quarter, I thought they might actually do this, because it's now five red zone interceptions for Josh Allen in the last six games, leading the league in interceptions with 11 overall. It's been an interesting season for Josh Allen. The odds-on favorite to win the MVP, the runaway MVP betting favorite, to then just 5 weeks later, he's like the fourth or fifth betting favorite in MVP.
And then he gets the ball at the end, and he looks at the scoreboard and sees how much time, and he's like, hey, wait a minute. I've seen somebody do this before. Yeah. It can be done.
He played perfect football in the fourth quarter. Like, that's the thing. Like, he was brilliant in the fourth quarter.
What I loved is that when my family arrived, and so my father-in-law was giving me the scouting report on what had been happening that day.
Okay, because you weren't watching.
So
because
he asked me if I was going to work, if I was on radio today, and I said, well, it depends on what KU does.
That's right. Yeah.
And so, like, KU won. And so
and you're like, okay, I'm
going to
be
well,
on.
Then I didn't. He didn't elaborate on the fact that it was, you know,
the way that they won.
Way that they won, but just said they won. So I'm like,
knife
okay.
to the back twice. Come on, I wanted to enjoy a little day off.
Didn't know that until this morning.
Watch party with U.S. and England today. Instead, we'll be watching with everybody else hanging out here on TV. You know, we'll all watch it together.
And then he said he was watching the Bills game, and he said, yeah, the Bills had that one under control. So he apparently tuned out at the wrong time.
Well, yeah, I mean, it was a fun one. Vikings-Patriots was a fun one, and it was a controversial catch, no catch, with Hunter Henry in the end zone, and his hand was underneath the ball, but as he slid to the left, it did, you know, touch the ground, but to me, the ground didn't make it move. And then as he rolled over, then he sort of lost control a little bit. But I thought he controlled the ball when it hit the ground. And then as he rolled onto his back, the ball starts to bounce a little bit, and he had already reached it over the goal line. I thought it was a touchdown and couldn't believe that they ruled it an incomplete pass. And people were looking at the Kelce Colts touchdown. When Kelce caught it, reached over the goal line, and his arms hit the ground and the ball bounced up. Like, you could tell the ground clearly knocked the ball out of Kelce's hands. But that's when they ruled Kelce reaching for the goal line was a, quote, football move. His knee, his elbow was down. His knee was down with the ball over the end zone. The football move was reaching the ball over the end zone. The ball comes out, whereas Hunter Henry catches it, comes down, gets a knee down, and then as he's rolling over. So I guess having the ball across the goal line is not a football move, so it's incomplete. I don't know. I thought it was a touchdown. I thought it was, you know, ridiculous that they overturned it, but I'm good with it because the Vikings
ended up winning. Complete the process of making the catch. Anybody can take the reservation. Can you hold the reservation?
I know what a reservation is, sir. I don't think you do. I don't think you do. The important part is holding the reservation. Anybody can catch the football.
See, you did that gesture that just automatically made me think of that scene.
That's exactly right. All right, let's talk some Chiefs football here.
I had a nightmare about this game last night.
The Rams?
Yes.
Why?
Because I was writing a story about it, and I could not remember the name of the Rams starting quarterback for this game. Because I'm not sure I know the name of the Rams starting quarterback for this game.
Well, I don't think it's going to be Perkins. I think it's going to be Wofford, right?
See, I mean, I don't know. But Perkins was the guy I couldn't name because I was like, okay, well, hey, in my dream, I'm like, hey, John Wofford's hurt. He didn't. And in my dream, he did not play the game.
Okay.
Perkins played the game, but I could not remember his name in this dream.
When you woke up, did you remember the game? Or
no,
remember
that
the
was
name?
The only I don't even remember the score of the game. I think the Chiefs won.
But I mean, when you woke up, did you remember that it was Wofford? You had to look it up?
I knew Wofford. Okay. I knew Stafford, everything. Could not remember Perkins for the life of me.
So you woke up and were like, what is this guy's name? Yes. I need to know this guy's name. Well, Wofford returned to full practice yesterday. He was limited on Wednesday, full participant yesterday. So he'll probably be in line to start. I mean, he is the backup, so I would expect that he would be the one playing if he's healthy and not Bryce Perkins. But either way, there's no Cooper Kupp. There's no Matthew Stafford. A'shaun Robinson didn't practice the last couple of days. So, you know, Higbee, you know, is now limited. He didn't practice on Wednesday, so he was limited with his knee injury yesterday as well. Like, it's a banged up Rams team. This really shouldn't be a problem, right?
No,
like,
it shouldn't be
an issue.
I mean, the only thing that factors into this game for me is this a rally around the flag moment for this team? Because they know that they are so beaten up. They know they're 14.5-point underdogs. They know all of this.
15.5 now.
Everybody is trashing them. Nobody thinks they can win this game. And they just go out there and, you know, beat the best team out there. That'll prove everybody. That's the only thing. That's the only intangible whatsoever in checking the box for the Rams. But everything else is in the favor of the Chiefs.
They're so overmatched in this one.
They are.
They are so overmatched. Allen Robinson's even limited. Like, you know, no Cooper Kupp, no Matt Stafford, John Wofford, your quarterback. They're going with a running back that, you know, they were going to trade at one point or had you know.
They released their second-best running back.
Yeah, released the guy they started with the season. Like, their backfield or skill position player was Matt Stafford, Cooper Kupp, and Henderson. And Cooper Kupp's IR, Matt Stafford's not playing, Henderson's playing for the Jags. Now, I mean, so I don't think he's playing this weekend, but he's, you know, now he's a Jaguar. It's just, and defensively, like, they are so overmatched in this game that it shouldn't be an issue, because when the Chiefs won in L.A. and the video they put out, the Chiefs did, the franchise, when they put out their Twitter videos and on, you know, KC Chiefs, their website as well, that they were in the locker room and Andy Reid said, you know, hey, this week it's all about recovery. Tuesday, 10 o'clock. Get in there at 10 o'clock, and everybody's like, wow, we don't have to get in until 10 o'clock. We can sleep in on Tuesday. That's great, right? Andy said something about, you know, hey, you know who's coming to town on Sunday, defending Super Bowl champions? And Patrick Mahomes' face lit up. I was like, yeah, like, I don't think they really care about the 3-7 record. I think they're looking at it and saying, Rams, Super Bowl champions, coming to town.
Brand name.
Let's get it. Yeah. Let's get it. No Stafford, no Cooper Kupp. Who cares, man? Let's get it. It's the Rams, and the offensive line's got a test in front of them with Aaron Donald. You know, those guys can test themselves against the best in the league. So I don't think they're looking at it and saying this shouldn't be a problem. I don't think the Chiefs simply do that at all, which is why I think that the Chiefs should roll in this one. Like, I would take the Chiefs, you know, halftime line, full game line. I think this is just the Chiefs from coin toss to final whistle. Chiefs just control it.
And this is one of the, probably one of those moments where you love having your quarterback who can draw some fire and inspiration from just about anything.
True.
Because if this is his opportunity to tell this team, hey, this team, we should have beaten the Super Bowl last year. Let's go prove it, that we should have been Super Bowl champs last year.
Yeah.
Not to mention 54-51 sticking in his craw, too. So.
Yeah.
So Mahomes is going to be motivated for this one. So I think that's always a good thing.
What did you what'd you take away from the Chargers win? That, you know, they get that final drive and they, you know, win, and the final drive from the, you know, Chargers get the touchdown by Palmer, and then Chiefs do what they do and drive down the field and score a touchdown. What'd you take away from that game on the road against the Chargers?
I thought the first thing that stood out to me about that game was that it was over at halftime, that the Chiefs were going to win, because to me. And I would say even to the first drive of the second half, because I was thinking that they're 17-14, I think the score was, right? 17-13?
Yep, 17-13.
And Chargers have the ball. They have a chance to come down, get a touchdown, to get the ball to open the second half.
Yeah.
They could score there. They could be up by 18, you know, before the Chiefs get the ball back. And
20-13. Because it was
17-13, they settled for the field goal.
Settled for the field goal to make it 20.
They got the possession there, you know, late in the second
half.
Okay,
I see what you're saying. Okay.
Yeah. They got a chance to score there. You know, it's 24-13.
Yep.
Could score another 31-13.
Mm-hmm.
And this is the knockout punch. And they couldn't land it. And once the Chiefs get the ball back and it's 20-13, I'm like, yeah, they're going to win this game. And then you look, and then when they get the ball back at the end, I mean, I was 95% sure the Chiefs were going to win that game when they got it on that last possession.
Isn't that the story, though, of the Chargers, too, as an aside? And, you know, it just, as you said, that's kind of the story of the Chargers and Justin Herbert and Brandon Staley, is they couldn't land the knockout punch. It kind of feels like what the theme of that team is. Injuries are not like, oh, they didn't make the playoffs, or they didn't make the playoffs. They were at home against the Raiders last year in week, you know, 18, and they couldn't hit the knockout punch. Against the Chiefs earlier in the season last year at home, couldn't get the knockout punch, and the Chiefs win that one. Raiders win at the end of the year, couldn't get the knockout punch on Sunday.
But it circles back to reason why they probably couldn't get the knockout punch is because they really missed Mike Williams.
Yeah.
I mean, once he went out, that offense changed completely. I mean, they weren't as effective. I thought Spagnuolo was a lot more aggressive with the blitzing, so they were able to get some pressure on Herbert. I mean, and let's face it, I mean, Chargers offense was night and day, first half versus second half. I mean, that was just not the same offense out there. And maybe it was because it wasn't the same Chiefs defense, but, you know, Chargers just, I mean, once Mike Williams left the game, that was a big one. But the other thing about the Chargers that fascinates me is that they played Travis Kelce for 30 minutes in the middle of that game about as well as you possibly can. And sure, it was borderline because their strategy was just, let's grab on the Travis Kelce and beat the ever-living crap out of him. And they did it for 30 minutes. And then, I mean, I don't know what you do. I mean, if you're the Chargers, I put three people on Travis Kelce. I'll hold him, grab him, do whatever. Anybody else in the field can just be completely wide open. Let them beat you. Do not let Travis Kelce beat you, because that is all the dude does, is he beats the Chargers.
And what was it, the same play against the last touchdown? That was same play that they had last year in L.A. in overtime when Travis Kelce scored on that one, too.
And all he does is get the ball and then run through four tackles and into the end zone.
Yeah, I mean, it's the knockout punch is really interesting to talk about, just in comparing these two teams, that, you know, the Chargers can't get over the hump and the Chiefs don't lose in November and December, because those knockout punches, one, they don't take them, and two, they typically deliver those knockout punches. I talked about this in the first hour. Do you remember the last loss for the Chiefs in November and December?
I do.
Yeah, I didn't.
Until
I looked this morning.
It was in Nashville, yeah.
The Titans in 2019, that game in which changed a lot for the defense, changed a lot for the team. They didn't lose again that year. That was where Tyrann Mathieu was mad. And, you know, I think what they went into the bye week after that, it was Mahomes' first game back after the knee injury. They should have won. They had the fourth down and one play that was an odd call to where Blake Bell was the only read. Then you had the botched snap on the field goal attempt. You had Ryan Tannehill driving down the field in the last possession after the Chiefs defense had got stop after stop after stop and then couldn't get one more. Just a frustrating game. And they haven't lost a November and December game since then. What do you make of that? Why is this team 25? It's the 25 straight is a little bit like the Bill Self and KU consecutive Big 12 regular season titles. Like, it's such an amazing stat while also being underappreciated at the same time. That 25 straight in November, December, such an amazing stat, while also being, like, underappreciated, that's absurd that you would have that many wins in November and December, because you're playing some good teams. You're on the road against some good teams. You're playing playoff teams, teams that at the end of the year are fighting for their playoff lives, and yet the Chiefs find a way to win.
And what's fascinating, to me, probably to a degree, is just how under the radar it went. I mean, I don't think anybody was really talking about it until it got to 23 and 24. And I, you know, I asked Andy Reid and some of the players about it this week, and, you know, that's the first time it really come up in any pressers and everything like that, as far as, you know, how long the streak has been. And I thought, well, I would probably agree with what we heard from some of the players and from Andy Reid this week. I mean, you know, it's, I think a little bit of it is certainly that Andy Reid has changed his coaching style over the years. And to me, I kind of compare it, because I had a coach like this in high school that, you know, our team came out and was absolutely blazing beginning of the season. Couldn't beat us. And we were probably completely and totally burned out by the end of the year and couldn't get it done. So even though we were the best team in the world beginning of the year, we weren't the best team at the end of the year. And I think Andy Reid's changed that. I mean, and how much of it was he was changing in Philadelphia, and more of that change, because there's no doubt. I mean, he conducts practices later in the season differently now than he did in 2013.
Mm-hmm.
I mean, he has evolved, and, you know, and some of that, he's evolved a lot of things as a coach, but a lot of his evolution that I think we forget about is just how much of it's just behind the scenes as far as trying to make these guys, keep them fresh and lighten the reins a little bit late in the year to keep them focused. And to Andy's credit, I mean, he says it's a little bit of everybody. I mean, he thinks he didn't point the finger as much as his players did. I mean, the players were saying, yeah, it's pretty much Coach Reid. But he gives the credit to everybody, you know, as far as, you know, keeping these guys fresh and trying to stay away from injuries and the players wanting to be on the field and get things done.
I'd love to look at the evolution of Andy Reid throughout the years as a coach and how he's conducted practice throughout the years and how much easier or less work, less stressful the practices are late in the season now versus maybe where they were, you know, in mid-2000s, like 2005, 6, 7. I would love to know. Maybe they were the same. I don't know. But I'd love to know the evolution, because it also feels like the NFL overall, like training camps, not as many padded practices throughout the year as well for the NFL players with the CBA. And I mean, players are as skilled as they've ever been. And you're seeing it so much more. It has been a 12-month a year job, as opposed to, you know, 50s and 60s and things like that. It's been that, but players are so skilled, and by the time you get to November 25th, 26th, 27th, you've been doing this every day since late July. Like, do you really need to hit in practice on a Wednesday or a Thursday to have the muscle memory and your body ready to go to play on a Sunday? Like, do you need to do that to keep going? Or is it just getting some reps in practice, going through the game plan, seeing what the scout team looks like for the other team coming up, film study, things like that? Because body-wise, it kind of feels like your body's been trained right now. We're in week 11 or 12. Your body knows what it's going to expect week in and week out, and now it's just recovery and staying healthy. Whereas years past, it was like, well, you got to keep doing this. The only way you can get better is by, you know, tackling. Maybe in training camp and in the preseason games, but it's week 12, week 13 now.
Yeah, and I mean, I can only speak from since I've been covering the team, you know, back in 2016. But even I've seen, you know, evolutions in how the practice goes, because, you know, in 2016, I would say, I mean, that was what I consider baseline, because that was the first practices that I would have seen in season and had some experience with it. But, you know, even then you started to see the signs of, like, okay, veterans, Tom Bahali doesn't practice.
Yeah, that's true.
You know, a couple of, he would typically, you know, I think they would usually give him maybe Wednesdays and Thursdays off there for a while.
Mm-hmm.
He was out there on the field watching, but wasn't really going through anything. And, you know, he'd go through Friday, which was nothing. I mean, that was just to rest his body because he was an older veteran. And then eventually, they had a lot of veterans, so sometimes there were some other guys that would sneak into that. By the end, you know, Justin Houston was the same way. I mean, they'd give him some time off. Anybody with knee problems wouldn't work indoors, which is, you know, and that's still something Andy Reid does. Mm-hmm. I mean, you know, I think you still see it. If anybody's on an injury report and has been a full participant with a knee injury, and then they go indoors, they're going to be limited or not practicing. Mm-hmm. I mean, this is what he does. But I remember, and this was probably 4 or 5 years ago, when he started going to these Wednesday practices that were no helmets, no pads. And I mean, I think it was in December when he first started doing it. And then, you know, it creeps into November. Now he's doing it in October. You know, I mean, it's they get into it, and it used to be just the late in the season practice. Now he kind of calls it mid-season mode.
Yeah, they started it after Tennessee, because I remember Todd asking him on the Monday after that Tennessee game and saying, you know, you recover from this tough physical game, you got a big one coming up. He's like, well, it's perfect timing because we're actually starting our mid-season practice where we're dialing it back this week anyway.
Well, and if I'm not mistaken, I think they had even done that before that, and then they went into a new mode after that. So, you know, I mean, yeah, he's – and you're right. I mean, I don't – I think that probably at this point the best asset that you could have this late in the season is a healthy body.
Yeah.
And, you know, and he's done that some other ways too. I mean, there's rules about how, you know, many hours that they can keep the players on the field and do things. And he's changed as far as that allotment goes. I mean, it used to be a lot more practice time, you know, more of the 11-on-11s and more of the physical contact stuff. Now they go through more of the walkthroughs. You know, they spend a little bit more time on that. It's hard to argue with the results, though.
Yeah, absolutely. We'll take a timeout. We'll come back. We'll continue rolling. Look at the NFL contenders. Get Matt's thoughts on some things that we saw in the game against the Chargers in the last few weeks, the way the defense is playing. What Sky Moore looked like against the Chargers, that was really encouraging because, you know, even outside of the receptions that he had, I thought he looked pretty good. And there were a couple plays watching the All-22 that he was open. Just, you know, Mahomes hadn't got there to him in the reads. And one of the things I'm going to ask you, Matt, is, you know, the progressions through that. We've seen Sky Moore down the line in progressions when Patrick will eventually get there. And against the Chargers, it was the same thing. But Sky Moore won those matchups. And Mahomes never got there in some of the All-22. Is that going to start to change? Where if they're looking at the film and they're seeing Sky Moore win, is it now he moves up in some of the progressions with Patrick Mahomes? We do that next.
You're in the zone with Jason Anderson on Sports Radio 810 WHB.
Hey, if you're looking for a more rewarding job where you're truly valued, I've got some good news for you. TVH is hiring. You can visit them online at tvhjobs.com. They're looking for dog lovers, football fans, hikers, bikers, barbecue lovers, anybody interested in a great place to work that wants to be a part of a great company. That's what you need to know if you're looking at TVH. They offer many amazing benefits, including preschool and on-site wellness coaches. Plus, at TVH, every single part counts. They keep the machines going, and they keep you growing. So apply right now at tvhjobs.com. TVH is known to its customers as the worldwide leading supplier of quality parts for the material handling and industrial equipment industries. But to its employees, TVH is known as one of the best places to work with a company culture that's second to none. So visit them online if you are interested in becoming a part of the TVH team. Go check them out online at tvhjobs.com.
All right, we hang out with Matt Derrick. We'll talk with Kendall Gammon coming up at noon. Chiefs-Rams coming up on Sunday, 3:25. That is a Fox game.
America's Matt, Game of the Week.
That's right, America's Game of the Week. A lot of previews for that yesterday throughout the day of football with Thanksgiving. Matt, you wouldn't have seen that because you were not watching any football yesterday.
No, but I did see a tweet from someone pointing out that the at least on one of the on-screen promos, they didn't even mention the Rams. It was just Patrick Mahomes and the Chiefs.
I didn't see that. I didn't see that because there were a lot of things going on. We were watching football, but commercials and things like that, we weren't really paying that much attention to it when the plays were going
on. You can't put Matt Stafford on there. You can't put Cooper Kupp. I mean, nope. It's Aaron Donald or bust.
We could put Allen Robinson out there. No, probably not. So one of the things we mentioned going to break is, you know, Sky Moore's game against the Chargers. He needed to step up with no Juju Smith-Schuster, no Mecole Hardman, and then Kadarius Toney left the game. And he plays 42% of the snaps to Sky Moore. 6 targets, 5 receptions, 63 yards. A good game. And to me, the more encouraging part is how often he was winning his matchup. So what did you see from Sky Moore and a takeaway from his game against the Chargers? And does it mean anything to you moving forward?
Yeah, I'm with you. I mean, I saw Sky Moore getting more open than he has at any point this year. I mean, he was winning his matchups. There was absolutely no doubt about it. I think you also saw a guy who was playing with a lot more confidence than he's been playing with. Certainly getting a couple of those receptions, I think, helped. I mean, that's something that he can build upon, I think, is going to help. You know, the question to me is, you know, is he's getting open. Is he getting open where Mahomes is expecting him to? Because, you know, you know that with him and Kelsey, they've been together long enough that when Kelsey needs to make an adjustment, Mahomes knows it. I mean, and generally speaking, they know it at the snap that he's like, okay, hey, this guy's shading Kelsey this way. Here's where he's going to be open. This is where Kelsey's going to make the adjustment. That's where he's going to go with the ball. At this point, you know, how much does he really know that? How much is Sky freelancing a little bit to get open? And, you know, and is he getting him in the same place? Because that's one of the things we've seen earlier this season when they've, you know, missed connections, is that maybe Sky's getting open, but he's just not exactly where Mahomes expects him to be. So that's part of it. But, I mean, I think you saw in that game against the Chargers, I think you saw exactly what you're hoping you can get from Sky Moore the rest of the year. Workload-wise, I think that's what he's comfortable with. I think that's what the Chiefs are comfortable with. He's not going to be an every-down guy because he doesn't know all three positions yet. They haven't thrown all on his plate yet.
Every-down guy the rest of the year, right?
Right, just this year. So, I mean, and to me, hey, if you're going to get Sky Moore 40, 45% of the snaps and he is going to give you three or four catches every game, maybe have a breakout game here or there, I would take that to the bank right now.
The encouraging sign, and you know, one of the things I wondered when the Chiefs traded for Kadarius Toney, and we talked about it, was, you know, is this buyer's remorse on Sky Moore? They're not seeing what they want to see from Sky Moore, that they feel like they need to go and make an acquisition. And, you know, the last couple of weeks, I don't think that's been the case, especially watching this game against the Chargers, that, you know, it's more of Kadarius Toney helps now. He's also a replacement for Mecole Hardman. And Sky Moore is on the team because you just simply want good wide receivers. You want guys that can get open and catch the ball when it's thrown their way. And that's what he does. It was encouraging with the Chargers because he had to step up and play. And he was open a number of times. And one of the questions that I'll have moving forward is, if he's getting more snaps, so a higher percentage of snaps when he's out there, is he moving up in the progression of what that particular play is? Because when he's the backside of the 3-by-1, three receivers on one side with Kelsey over there too, but three targets on one side and he's the lone guy on the other, it typically don't look his way. It's typically going the other way. In fact, one of those third down receptions, he was on the backside by himself and Mahomes was looking left, going through the then started to run right and then saw Sky Moore and threw the ball. That's when he jumps up and catches it and picks up a first down. He was open, but Mahomes was even running before he looked right to Sky Moore. The play to Travis Kelce that hits Kelce in the back when on third and three, Sky Moore toasted his guy, and he's open over the middle for like 15, 20-yard gain, but Mahomes never looked there. So it's part of, has there been this progression throughout the year to where Mahomes is like, yeah, he's not where I want him to be, so I don't even need to look that way. He's playing because he's got to play. But here's where I'm looking on this play, because I don't know that Sky's going to be there. Whereas now, maybe watching film, more reps, Sky maybe being more comfortable. I wonder if he moves up the pecking order in plays in which he may be part of an earlier progression if he's showing that he can win.
And that to me is, you know, and that's something, I mean, we could all get lost in this. I mean, I'm not just saying it's a fan thing, but, you know, you're talking about Sky Moore's being out there for 27 snaps. He's not the primary read on 27 snaps.
Yeah, no.
If anything, I mean, he might be the primary read on five. I mean, you know.
I think one of those might have been the Derwin James, when he cuts across Derwin James' face and caught the slant and then picked up another 15 yards or so.
Yeah.
I think he might have been one of the earlier targets. And also, by the way, he won and toasted James on that.
And you know, from Holmes as quarterback, I mean, obviously the play has, you know, progressions built into it. I mean, calling a play, he knows who his primary is and who's 1, 2, 3, 4, 5. But then once he gets out there, I mean, he's going to look and see what the defense is showing him. And that's going to change the alignment too, because he could look at it instantly and say, you know what, my primary guy's not open, so I'm going to be going here. And, you know, and let's face it, I mean, with Sky, you know that going out and looking at any defense, Mahomes also knows that he can go to Kelsey at any point.
Yeah,
so that's the other thing. And that's, Sky Moore's not that guy yet. And Juju is probably getting to that point where Mahomes is like, hey, you know what? My one's not there, but you know what? Juju should be open based on this defense that I'm seeing right now. And that's what he looks for. I mean, Sky will get there. And if Sky can progress to a point where Mahomes is comfortable with him consistently being, you know, that third read, he's probably going to get some more balls.
I wonder how far or how long it went, or I should say how much of a long way it went from Mahomes when Sky Moore turned and then ran with Mahomes on the plan B when Mahomes got out and scrambled and he hit Sky Moore down the field, that Sky's going across the field right to left, looking at it from the end zone. Mahomes is rolling right, and then Sky peels back, and Mahomes throws it as Sky Moore is peeling back, so almost his back is to him when he throws it. That's the one where Sky Moore dove and had to come up and catch the ball. I wonder how far that goes in Mahomes' eyes, that as soon as he scrambled, Sky Moore, boom, got in connection with Mahomes and then caught the ball, you know, yeah, when it was thrown his way.
I think it's got to. I mean, any time that, you know, a receiver helps bail out a quarterback in a situation like mm-hmm. that, I mean, it helps points-wise. I mean, it's hard not to. And, you know, and there have been some moments. I mean, Mahomes has an interception this year that Andy Reid had absolutely no problem coming out and saying it was on Sky Moore.
Yeah.
And sometimes that's trying to challenge a player. I mean, maybe it wasn't completely his fault. But, you know, and I will say this. I mean, since Andy Reid said that, we just saw probably Sky Moore's best game.
That's a good point. Defense, I wanted to talk to you about that real quick before we take a break and get your prediction for the Rams. What are you seeing from the defensive line? Is this a step up for the D-line that maybe it can start to be counted on a little bit more, that it isn't a go get Burns, go get Quinn, go get somebody to finish off this defensive line to get that real playmaker, because they're sacking the quarterback 18 in the last four games.
They are getting sacks. I mean, it is absolutely helping. I'm still, you know, worried about the number of sacks that they have to get off of blitzing. That's a concern, because if you're going to have to consistently blitz to get pressure, you're going to get burned sometimes. So until they can consistently get with four, and they did get with four against the Chargers at times, mm-hmm. but I also saw a defense that was just jumping off the ball. They had that snap count
they did.
Down.
Well, five sacks were with only four rushers. Now, one of them was Willie Gay, but Carl Loftus dropped off in coverage.
Yeah.
So they did bring the blitz with Willie Gay, but only brought four guys.
And was a wonderfully well disguised and executed blitz. I mean, Herbert never saw that coming.
He had Willie Gay on Eckler the whole time. Willie Gay's
never
got Austin Eckler. Eckler's going to my left out there. Willie Gay's got him. I may not look there because Gay's pretty good. I'm looking to the right, and Gay leaves Eckler and goes in and blitzes. So it was beautifully timed and well done, because it made Herbert hesitate because Carl Loft has dropped off. So now Herbert's like, oh, wait, that guy's there. And then he gets sacked. That was the only one where they, you know, quote unquote, blitzed on that one. They were getting some pressure and getting sacks. And to me, the most important part is that they're bringing the quarterback down, whereas yeah. last year they just couldn't do that.
And this is pure guess on my point. I don't like to do this very often, but I'll just go ahead and make a pure guess. Either Joe Cullen or Frank Clark picked up something on the snap count because the line and the edges were, I mean, there were some times when they were jumping before the ball moved. I mean, they absolutely read something on somebody. I don't know what it was for sure, but they picked up a key and they just absolutely abused it. And the Chargers didn't know what it was because they could never fix it.
The blitzing thing, I think, is interesting because in the last four games when they've got the 18 sacks, now there's some blitzes, there's some other things that are going on, but I looked at just the sacks, okay? So there are some plays when they're not getting pressure. You know, the Bills game where Josh Allen had all day to throw the touchdown to Dawson Knox. So they got no pressure on that one. There were some other plays against the Chargers in which they did not get pressure. But of the 18 sacks in the last four games, 13 of them have actually come with only four rushers. 13 of the 18, which was a surprise to me. I thought there would be more blitzes or at least more times bringing five or more guys to get a sack. But 13 of the 18, only four rushers. And in fact, two of them were worth only three. That was a real surprise to see two sacks when the Chiefs only brought three guys. They dropped a guy off, whether it was Carl Loftus or somebody else, and they end up getting a sack with just Chris Jones, or Dana's, one of his sacks was with only three guys. Where they dropped off, I think, Carl Loftus, and then Dana just whipped the guard and went and made the sack. That was only with three guys, but it really didn't matter if it was three or four, because Dana won so quickly that, you know, you didn't really need it. Do you make anything of that, or is that just sort of anecdotal on the specific sacks, whereas are they getting pressure in other plays when they're not blitzing, that we're focusing more on those when it might be third down and need to have it, and snap count sort of getting that?
Well, that's what I'd love to know a little bit more. I probably need to look at those, because, you know, my instinct and my anecdotal gut is telling mm-hmm. me that a lot of the reason why they're probably getting these sacks is because they've just been playing better on first and second down mm-hmm. and they've been putting them into some situations.
Yeah.
The other part is, it's what, 18 sacks in five games?
Four
games? Okay. And five and a half, six of those are probably Chris Jones.
Yeah.
I'm thinking.
Yep.
I mean, that's the other part of it, too, is I will just say Chris Jones has been playing
he's pretty good, the best football
of his career. I think he's playing just as well, if not better, than he did in 2018.
Oh, yeah. Oh, I agree
in
with
that stretch.
I agree with that. Yeah.
I mean, he's got a real good chance of topping 15 and a half. And right now, I think he's going to do it.
Yep. I'm just glad that I took the over on Chris Jones, 9.5 sacks this year.
Ooh.
Happy about that one. Happy about that one. All right, we'll take a break. We'll come back. We'll get Matt Derrick's thoughts and prediction for Chiefs-Rams coming up next. All right, Matt Derrick, Chiefs Digest, our guest. Update on Texas-Baylor. Texas is leading right now 14-9. Baylor is driving. Baylor jumped out to a 9-0 lead. Texas responded with a couple of touchdowns to take the 14-9. Baylor, 9-0, they missed an extra point. So it was a touchdown and a field goal. They missed the extra point to go up 9-0. Baylor now has the ball at the 11-yard line of Texas. So they're on the verge of scoring a touchdown or field goal coming within a couple of points. So there's the update on that. Matt Derrick with us. All right, Matt, what do you think happens, Chiefs and Rams? It is now a 15.5-point spread for the Chiefs.
Just keeps getting worse for the Rams, and I completely understand it because they are completely outgunned and outmanned. The only, I mean, I mentioned earlier there was one intangible. I can only make the case that maybe there's a second intangible in the Rams' favor, in that this certainly seems to be a shape up or ship out week for the Rams with some of the transactions that they made this week and letting go of some guys.
Mm-hmm.
Other than that, the only thing the Rams really have going for them is pride, and I don't know if that's enough. The Chiefs are the better team. They're at home. I think they're going to be well motivated in this game. I am good with the spread. Chiefs 31, Rams 10.
31-10. That puts it at 41.
Maybe there's a backdoor cover that.
Right around. That would be the Chiefs covering, but the under. Because I think the under is like 42.5, 43. I haven't looked at it today. So
the Rams are the problem. The Chiefs could get to the over on their own.
I think the Chiefs could name their score. Like I think Andy Reid in this game can go in and say, you know what, let's get to 40.
Aaron Donald is going to have something to say about that.
Yeah, he's a fine player. He's he's an amazing player.
But this strikes me as a team. I saw some odds the other day that said that they're still the betting favorite to win the NFC West in
the Rams
some places.
Are?
Yes.
Interesting.
I wouldn't put a dollar on them to win right now. I
mean, no, not at all.
They got nothing left.
Baylor kicks a field goal. They're down 14-12. So Texas getting the ball back. Mizzou, Arkansas, Matt.
It's going to be a game.
Confidence level? On a scale of 0 to Mizzou.
4.9.
Okay.
That's about as high as I can go.
Yeah. I feel like it's kind of like it's a peak and valley. So it starts at 0, and then the middle is the high point, and then 0 to Mizzou. Mizzou would be down at the bottom again because of what happens with Mizzou.
I haven't looked at is Mizzou favored in this game?
3.5 is Mizzou a dog.
See, I would. Okay.
They're Arkansas is 3.5-point favorites.
I can buy that. I mean, this feels like a 2.5-3-point game to me. I could go either way.
What's the, real quick, and we'll break, what's the significance of this game for Mizzou? Win or lose? Sitting 5-6 right now. If somebody has money on Mizzou over under 5.5 preseason win total,
if Eli and Blake Baker hadn't gotten the extensions done, I would say it's higher than it is. I mean, from that standpoint, it's not that big. They might even still play in a bowl game at 5-7.
Yeah, yep, they're in. I mean, they're in some bowl projections.
Still possible.
Yep.
So scale of 1 to 10, 3, 3.5.
All right, we'll see what 3.5.
Probably,
that's the line.
I'd probably say it's more like 6.5 if the extensions weren't done, but.
3.5, that's the line today. So
there
that's
you go.
Exactly.
3.5's the number.
How big it is. Matt, you're the man. Appreciate it, sir.
Enjoy Ribsgiving.
Yes, I will. And if you are interested in coming tomorrow, just let me know. And you are invited. You are invited. We'll take a timeout. We'll come back. We'll talk to Kendall Gammon coming up next.